From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Our connection for this hour was made when a job opened up at a Rochester company. There would be open applications and a competitive process. Dozens of people would apply for this job, and there are some questions at the center of this scenario. First of all, what are the odds that a Hispanic woman will get this job? Second, if a Latina gets the job, will she be paid the same as a white man would have been paid? The Economic Policy Institute has something to say about that. They write that Hispanic women are paid 54 cents on the dollar earned by white men. That's for all jobs across all fields. And when it comes to the same job, they write that Hispanic women are still lagging far behind. And so while we often talk about the gender pay gap, advocates for change point to this issue to demonstrate what intersectionality looks like. This hour, a conversation about this part of the pay gap and what advocates for change are trying to accomplish. They have an upcoming rally and more to tell us about this hour. Let's say hello to our guests in studio. Gaynell Weathers is president of AAUW. That's the American Association of University Women. Welcome back to the program. Thanks for being here.
Thank you for inviting me.
Also with us is Jackie Ortiz. Jackie is a member of Rochester City Council and La Cumbre, among other things. Welcome back, Jackie.
Thank you, Evan.
And also with us is Julie Dammerl, associate professor emeritus at MCC, a volunteer for the League of Women Voters, Action Together Rochester, and the Worker Justice Center, among other organizations. Welcome back to you. Thanks for being here.
Thank you very much, Evan.
This is a case, I think, Jackie Ortiz, where when we talk about what intersectionality is and what it means, this is probably a place that you would point to and say, well, this is what we're talking about. There may be inequities, but the inequities are sort of amplified when you look at how people of color, women of color, and then women of color who are Latino women, African-American women, Native women. It sort of is an example of maybe the layering that happens with challenges like this, yeah?
Absolutely. And so thank you for having us on and discussing this particular topic. So important. And Evan, you're absolutely right. There is pay equity or inequity when we look at all women as compared to their white male counterparts here. Mm-hmm. But when you continue to actually break it down, as you just alluded to, it actually gets worse. And so you mentioned the figure there, 54, 56 cents for Latino women. It's 65 for African-American women, 83 cents for Asian women, and on down, right? We even have categories where we break it down by mothers. And we're looking at even taking a look at even transgender and lesbian, because we're really trying to make sure that we're taking a look at this holistically and not just from the total. Because when you look at it from 88 cents or something, you may not say that that's necessarily that bad. But when you really start to break it down, it becomes progressively worse. And it is a problem when we're talking about our families being able to sustain themselves in our communities.
Well, Gaynell and Julian, I want to get your opening thoughts on this, and then we'll get into a lot more of the specifics. We'll talk about the rally coming up here. How do you see this problem sort of, you know, generally speaking, in 2019?
Oh, God. Well, it's really challenging, because we have to get young women to think differently about who they are and have more self-confidence and understand that they can negotiate their salaries. The other concern I have for me in terms of this whole issue is long-term, how it impacts retirement, not just your everyday life, but the retirement issue becomes critical, especially when women are living a lot longer. You know, that whole issue around pay, lack of raises, or not getting what, your value. And I think that's the critical issue for me long term, because it's important to have the necessary salaries, especially it affects your Social Security.
I wonder what it is like to work. And again, as a white male, I think just looking at the numbers and looking at my own life experience, I can't relate. And I'm asking honestly, what it must be like to work feeling like retirement might not be possible.
It isn't for many people. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Absolutely.
It isn't, because people are looking, if you look at even the workforce now, and I think they can speak to the data, but you're looking at people who have to go back to work, who are dealing with not enough income for their medication that they're taking. So you're looking in the workforce that people are now concerned, I have to go find a job at one of the stores to really make my ends meet, or seniors not having enough money. And I think that's critical. And it's just really a challenge in our hearts. I know we have the data, but it's really a matter of our hearts and minds to really think of justice and how we have to treat women fairly.
Julie, how do you view the issue from the work perspective you have had in your career and the work that you're doing now? Because we do have data. Mm-hmm. The data is there.
Yes.
But you know, on for lack of better sort of phrasing in this, everyone can try to grab from all sides the data and try to kind of use it in different ways. What do you think is the most important takeaway from understanding what this pay gap is?
Well, we have to think about how it affects, that pay gap affects everything in a family's life, not just a woman's life, but her family's life. And so women who are paid less than men have more difficulty repaying their loans. They have more difficulty making ends meet. They have more difficulty finding time for their family. And that's women who have families. But lots of women don't have a family. They also have a pay gap. They also have loans. They also have obligations. They also have ends to meet. And so all of that is impacted by those cents. And so when Jackie said 88 cents or 83 cents or whatever it is, and somebody might say, well, that's not much. Well, if you take that over a career, right, it makes a huge difference. When I started working in Rochester, I took a $10,000 pay cut thinking, oh, I'm so glad I got a job. Well, I was right, glad I got right, a job, but I'm a retired woman now, and that $10,000 pay cut has making a huge difference in how I live. And for women, the data is kind of astounding. A Latina woman would have to work to the age of 94 to earn what a white non-Hispanic male had made by the age of 60 after working 40 years. So if we imagine that person still existing, the Latina woman would work until the age of 94. And in some states, that woman would have to work past the age of 100 to have equal earnings to a male. So
So we're talking about very large amounts of money at the end of the day over someone's entire career. And those numbers that she's referencing there is well over $1 million for Latina women. We're talking right, $800,000 to $900,000 over that lifetime for African American women. So these are real dollars that make a big difference in someone's life and being able to, you know, pick themselves up and being able to uplift themselves out of, you know, whatever situation they are and taking care of their family.
If we think about the impact on the day-to-day basis, it's hard to get out of, if you're in poverty, if you have a lower wage job, it's really hard to get out of that if you can't make ends meet because of salary inequity.
Well, it also has to do with the transfer of wealth. Mm-hmm. How do I transfer some of my incomes or properties to my children so mm-hmm. they can continue to move forward? When I was coming here this morning, I thought of my grandmother. She would be 120. And it was about, and I could be wrong, but you get the gist of, it was about 10 years ago, we as her grandchildren, her descendants, received monies from her pension that no one paid her. Imagine that, you know, and it wasn't much, but it was just like, wow, you guys waited this long to recognize and distribute the funds that she should have been able to receive when she retired. Mm-hmm. Fortunately, she did, with her limited income, have property. So she was able to pass that along. I think about the women today who are working, cannot afford even to buy a property with the limit, and having two or three jobs, plus taking care of their families. How do we help them visualize for the future, for their own families, and what they want to pass on to their children?
All right. I want to let our listeners know what's coming up on Tuesday, April 2nd. You have an event?
We do.
A rally? What's going on?
So April 2nd is Women's Equal Pay Day. And several of us, those of us here in the room and many other organizations, are coming together in observance of that day. We are having a rally on at 11:45 at 750 East Avenue, Workers United, in observance of that to bring awareness to this particular issue. And hopefully we'll be celebrating on that day because the state has actually passed the pay gap legislation that's out there. But, you know, even if not, they're soon thereafter. But that's what we're coming together to do. And we look forward to having as many people there as possible.
Okay, that's April 2nd. And before we get to some phone calls that have already started, Al, Andrew, we'll get you in just a moment here. And listeners, if you want to join in the conversation about gender pay equity, 844-295-TALK. That's toll-free, 844-295-8255 or 263-WXXI if you're in Rochester, 263-9994. You can email the program connections@WXXI.org. Want to do a couple of things here. You know, some of the pushback to the notion that the gap is, I mean, the gap is real. We know it's
absolutely
real.
That's correct.
But some of the pushback is that it's all sort of discrimination-based, comes from whether it's Christina Summers, who works for the American Enterprise Institute, John Stossel, Jordan Peterson, others who have said, look, what we have to see is that there is discrimination, but it accounts for a small proportion of the gap. Most of the gap is women making different choices than men. Women want to work in different lines of work, different careers. They want to make different choices throughout their lives, and that the gap is more reflective of that. That's what's up. You've all recoiled in some fashion. So let me just ask you what you think. Again, Ellen?
Well, all of us have to make choices, but still, you know, if I'm doing the same work as a male, I should get the same pay, no matter what. And I think, to me, that's common sense. You know, I was a teacher. Yes, I made a choice to work for a non-public school. We didn't make a lot of money, but I think the salaries were relative then. The issue is, how do you deal with this long term in terms of retirement? What kind of monies can you make? So I think we have to have a better dialogue in terms of, you know, people make choices in terms of jobs. Yes, some jobs get paid. If you're an accountant, yes. But a woman, an accountant, should get the same pay as a male. I just don't see the problem as to why they can't.
Jackie.
So I think there's two things here that I'd like to kind of mention in regards to this. So first of all, I very much look at this also and how much we value women's work. Because there are absolutely fields that are predominantly performed by women. But there are reasons, all different types of reasons of why people make certain choices in terms of the career fields that they've chosen. Perhaps the attainment of certain levels of education are maybe not possible for some people, but that doesn't necessarily mean that that work is any less strenuous or laborious than any other one per se. So we're also talking about making sure that we recognize the value of women's work. So that's number one for me. I think that's extremely important. But the other thing there, when we talk about various professions, sometimes this topic somehow centers around lower wage type of jobs. This happens even more so when we're talking about higher paid jobs. Absolutely. In fact, there is actually an entire study done on various professions and the wage gap within them. Physicians and surgeons is one of the number one professions where there is a very large wage gap. In fact, 60 to 70% of what women make, 60 to 70% of what male physicians and surgeons make in the same field. So these are highly educated women that are also dealing with these wage inequities. So this isn't just talking about low wage labor, if you will. This is all across the board, educated or not.
And and again, this is somewhat based on research and many conversations, but also understanding sociologically hiring practices. So the people in this country much more likely to be making the hiring decisions for higher paying jobs are people who look like me.
That's correct.
And we know a couple of things about that. Number one, sort of like sorts with like throughout sort of the animal kingdom in some degree, and human beings are not immune to that. So a white man is more likely to hire a white man in a hiring process, or if it's a woman, a white woman. So again, I'm not saying it's impossible for that not to happen. Of course, it's not impossible, but more likely when white men are doing the hiring, it reflects, the hiring choices reflect themselves more often. And so in terms of, you know, what we currently have are higher paying jobs, that probably is somewhat a barrier. That's probably why when you look at 54, 55, 56 cents on the dollar for Latino women compared to what white men make, we're talking about all jobs, but that part of the reason is Hispanic women are not necessarily moving up in fields into management positions, into top-level positions, and that's sociologically, in a lot of different studies and information, that's part of why. Fair, Jackie?
Yes and no. I think it exists across the board. And what my point I was just trying to get at is that it really does not necessarily what profession per se. It really exists across the board. And so, you know, whether someone has decided to move on up that track or not, in healthcare fields, right, which again is very much predominantly women, you know, you have women who are taking care of our parents, our grandparents, who are feeding them, bathing them, administering medication. And many of these professions positions are not even making a living wage. So we have a number of issues going on here. And for me, it goes back to the value of women's work. But I also want to bring up one other thing here, because I think as we talk about this, make no mistake, no one ever said that these individuals, male or female, could not be paid more than someone else. As a result of gender, it cannot be different. But if there is seniority, if there is some sort of merit base based on production, or who knows what the type of field is, no one is saying that you have to be equal just for the sake of being equal. So I want to be clear about this. As a result of gender, it needs to be equal. But there are obviously other factors that go into someone's pay. And so no one is taking anything away from those other things.
But do you believe that it's so unequal, the actual talent and output, that it should be 56 cents on the dollar?
Absolutely not.
Okay.
The other thing we have to talk about is our own stereotype and biases about women in terms of their intellect, their ability to perform. And it's the same thing for minorities in terms when you talk about hiring practices. Dealt with issues around how the name. Sometimes your name eliminates you from a position even being considered. So I think we have to understand all those other indicators that keeps us from moving forward as women.
I'll turn to Julie, and just to kind of put a finer point on what Ms. Weathers is saying there, that Shankar Bidantham and some others through the NPR family have done some really good work recently just looking at all things being equal. I mean, like equal resumes, white-sounding names callbacks and hired more often than, you know, stereotypically non-white-sounding names.
No question.
Yeah. Go ahead, Julie. What do you think, Julie?
I just wanted to state that the pay gap isn't based on all jobs in the way that somebody might be thinking that, you know, women are choosing lower-paid jobs and that's why the pay gap is there.
Right.
The pay gap is based on similar jobs, similar work. So it's not based on the Hispanic doctor who is making $150,000 compared to a housekeeper who's making $10,000. That's not what's creating the wage gap. It's on same jobs the board. It's not on every job comparison. And I just also want to say that women of color have a double burden, and it's sexism and racism.
Right.
So, I mean, that's reinforcing what you're all saying,
right,
that we're looking at a much bigger problem.
That's correct.
Than just gender for women of color.
Right. And I think also, Evan, we want to make sure that we add in, and what we're talking about here is really trying to get at some of the structural issues that are also hindering women from being able to achieve pay equity. And so some of the things that right now New York State is actually looking at, and we are considered, let me just put out there, a moderate protection when we talk about our state. There are states that are better, there are states that are worse out there. So, you know, we're somewhere in the middle, and we're doing our best to get better. But some of the things that we're currently talking about are banning salary history. And so when you talk about structural issues that are preventing some of these things from being able to be closed, when you are taking a look at someone's past salary history in order to be a determinant of their future salary history, that's a problem because the position is what it is. It pays what it pays. And if you're able to perform it, you should be able to achieve that. What you previously earned somewhere else on a different type of profession or job should not be a determinant for what your future earnings look like.
All right, let me get some feedback from listeners. I'm going to start with Andrew, first up in Irondequoit. Go ahead, Andrew.
Hey, the lady was talking about wanting to give your children some inheritance. It seems to me, Evan, that you have been having a lot of socialists on, the Socialists of America or whatever, and they're against inheritance somehow. How does that figure into this conversation?
Probably a fair question for DSA. I don't know if we have any DSA members at the table here, to be honest.
It seems like they're going to take over the world in the not too distant future.
No, I think that they're offering a critique of capitalism as a way of making sure opportunity is equal.
Okay.
I don't hear anybody taking over the world, but I think your question on inheritance is a fair one. I don't have DSA here, but I would ask them. I think it's fair. Okay. Andrew, thanks. As always, great to hear from you. Thank you. I don't know, maybe a separate question for a separate day. Let me get Al in Rochester. Go ahead, Al.
Hi, yeah. I really appreciate what I'm hearing about retirement for women. And as a, you know, for me, as a response to the comments made during the 2016 election, I started volunteering more than usual to fight for women's rights. I found pay equity is the main core opportunity to move forward. All women and women of color especially hold our biggest chance to improve New York's economy. And I've searched recently the Democratic Party platform for the words equal pay and wage gap. And what I found was this, if I can quote it. We believe in at last guaranteeing equal pay for women. We will fight to secure equal pay for women, which will benefit all women and their families, particularly women of color, who are disproportionately impacted by discriminatory pay practices and against other factors that contribute to the wage gap. You know, I then searched for the Republican Party's platform for equal pay and for the words wage gap, and I got no results. And, you know, I personally, I live in Rochester, and over a year ago, I called Republican Rich Funke, because I live in his district, 55, to ask why he was quoted in local newspapers saying he enacted equal pay. And unlike most other engaged legislators, I got no response, as I hear other people don't get from Funke. But on his website, he's blogged in 2015, we passed equal pay for equal work, and he did not do that. The Republican Party is subverting their little legislations, and they're subverting the goal of pay equity by passing token, weak laws, you know, touting their false credentials. And the pay gap has actually gotten worse in the past year. I think it's important to recognize that it's getting worse. And Funke's blog gives a statistic about average women in New York with no mention of Black women nor Latinas, where the biggest opportunities for growth exist. And I worry that since our workforce doesn't receive equal pay for equal work, the economy in our neighborhoods and in Rochester and the economy of New York State lags. And last year, Jen Lunsford, a local Democrat, and she's a really great lawyer, she's on the Monroe County Bar Association, she almost beat Funke in Senate District 55. So I'm hopeful, and we can all hope that Jen runs again in 2020. Well, the presidential election will bring out more Democrats than we've ever seen in history.
All right. Well, Al, thank you. And, you know, I certainly, number one, I appreciate the call. Number two, I don't want to limit any part of the conversation. We don't have to get, you know, all that political. But I will say this, to be fair to Senator Funke, let me read directly from his website after this is, I think, 4 years ago now. This is what Senator Rich Funke wrote several years ago, upon passage of the Women's Equality Act in Albany. He wrote why he's proud of this. Quote, if the work is the same, it deserves the same pay. I'm proud this legislation ensures that women will earn the same for doing the same job as their male colleagues. End quote. That's Senator Funke. Does that work for you?
So it's a start. Because you have to remember, at the end of the day, the portions that they're discussing are the elements that were included in the previous year's budgets. And so the budget is either passed or not. And when it is passed, then essentially everyone is on board with what was inside that budget, or at least that's the way it appears. And so I'm thankful that that is a statement, but I'm also looking forward to the new measures that we're trying to take this particular year. And again, that's banning salary history, and as well as taking a look at not just equal pay, but equal pay for substantially similar work. They're very distinct things. And so, great. Let's keep it going. And I look forward for them, because we're not sure if it's actually going to be in this year's budget. And so if they're standalone bills, which I suspect that they may end up being, then I look forward to the senator and everyone else's vote yay on these particular items.
Let me just one follow up with Jackie, and then I'm going to have our other guests kind of respond to some of this as well here. Because when I read Senator Funke's words from 4 years ago, he is saying this legislation ensures women will earn the same for doing the same job as their male colleagues. Does it ensure that?
We do not have all of the various things yet. There are components that assist in us being able to close the gap.
This sounds like declaring victory from him.
We are definitely we cannot completely declare victory here. In fact, so there is a wonderful, actually, it's on the website of AAUW of New York in terms of where we stand on all of the particular items in regards to the pay gap on here. And yes, there are some remedies that have definitely checked the box in being able to do some enforcement, but there are still some things that are not achieved yet. So we're getting closer. We're getting better. I applaud everyone for trying to assist with that. We need to do more, and we need to finish this.
We're going to go back over that list of remedies in just a second. I know Gail and Julie want to jump in here. Go ahead.
No, I just want us to be clear. Equal does not mean the same. All of us are equal, but we don't. I mean, think about it as children.
Is this equality is not equity? Is that?
No, I just mean that we all, if you look at our family, everybody in the family might be equal, but the children in the family are not the same. They all have different personalities when you think about jobs, et cetera. So we use these words interchangeably, but they don't mean the same thing, so we have to be clear in terms of our definition. I'd like to interject. I know we're dealing with on the 30-foot level in terms of policies and procedures, et cetera. But what we're doing here at the National AAUW is we have a Work Smart program in terms of training young people how to negotiate their salaries. And I think that's critical when we're going to change systems and people, because if our young people know how to negotiate their salaries, that too will make a difference as we deal with the higher level issues. And that's critical. And, you know, I'll give you a personal story. My daughter wanted to negotiate a salary. She was moving up. She didn't call me. She called her father and spoke to her husband, who really can speak that language that you're talking about in terms of when you're going to that person who looks like you, Evan.
Yeah.
And if she has the same coded language, then it makes a difference. And I think that's the difference in terms of helping our younger people to how to negotiate their salaries. And I think if we're doing it at that grassroots level to really push, it will impact the larger issue of political legislation.
Okay. Julie?
Well, to speak to legislation, I just wanted to say that we can do a lot of things with legislation, and that's why voting is so important. And so every woman who may or may not be able to hold more than one job can certainly go out and vote for legislation. So some of the things that could be legislated is we could have stronger equal pay laws. And I have to say, New York State has good equal pay laws. The wage gap in New York State is not as large as it is nationally, but nationally, the Paycheck Fairness Act is once again up and going to be voted on in the House of Representatives. Right. So we have to think of all women, not just those who are in New York State. We can also lift up the wages of women who are in low-wage jobs by raising the minimum wage. And we can ensure that tipped workers receive at least the regular minimum wage before tips. We can increase the availability of high-quality, affordable child care. We can help protect workers from pregnancy discrimination. We can establish fair scheduling practices. We can provide paid family and medical leave and paid sick days. We can ensure that women have access to the affordable reproductive health care they need. We can protect women's rights to collectively bargain. All of those things can be legislated.
All right. I want to grab Lisa in Rochester next on the phone. Go ahead, Lisa.
Good morning or good afternoon. I appreciate the discussion of the well-documented pay gap, and particularly for people of color, for women of color. And I hope we're also thinking about remedying to the extent that we can the effects of this long-term effect for women who have finished their work life. I have a lot of clients when I'm working on senior housing cases who are taking care of other generations. They work their entire lives, sometimes with two jobs, and now they're taking care of their grandchildren, they're taking care of their siblings, they're taking care of their parents, and they're retired, but their Social Security income, and they have almost no no pension, no retirement savings. They have to try to figure out how to live in this community with a lack of accessible housing, and affordable housing.
Okay, Lisa, thank you. Some thoughts from the panel on that?
I agree 100% in terms of women needing to have those resources. We've not treated women historically fair in terms of pay. You know, you've got all the documentation, And I'll go back to, we changed the civil rights laws. We changed the voting laws. They've all been repealed. We have to begin to work on changing the hearts and minds of people around these issues, as well as have the legislation. So voting is important, and we need to get people in office that are reflective of those values.
All right, so there's an event coming up April 2nd. That is Tuesday, April 2nd, just before noon it starts. Where is the event?
At 750 East Avenue, Workers United.
Okay, that is focusing on a lot of the themes that we're talking about today. I know they would love to see you there. We're late for our only break, and when we come back, we're going to talk a little bit more about legislation. I've got a couple of emails from listeners who are concerned about unintended consequences here. We'll talk about that. And we'll continue to talk about the solutions that our guests see as we talk about a gender pay gap. You just heard Jackie Ortiz, member of Rochester City Council and a member of La Cumbre. Julie Damerill is here, Associate Professor Emeritus at MCC. Gaynell Weathers is President of AAUW, the American Association of University Women. You can call the program toll-free, 844-295-TALK. It's 844-295-8255. If you're in Rochester, 263-WXXI, 263-9994. You can email the program connections@WXXI.org. Coming up in our second hour, have you ever wondered, and I bet you have, what can I do to recycle this food waste? Should I really use a garbage disposal? Are we throwing out too much waste? What can be composted? How do we do it? Who will take it? We're talking about homeowners. We're also talking about businesses, organizations, everything. The upcoming New York State Organic Summit looks at this and more, and we answer those questions next hour. This is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Julie Damerill just mentioned a list of possible policy ideas that might help regarding a pay gap. And I want to read an email from a listener who said, Evan, I had a conversation recently about a company that's done some work on minimum wage impacts and found that a number of concerns about pulling back on fringe benefits in order to make up the cost of the higher wage to employers. So does your panel think about possible scaling back of other benefits, especially for women who might need health care, if we end up seeing a raise in the minimum wage? Julie?
Absolutely not.
Right.
This is about wages. This is about a living wage. This is about taking care of people. This is about the economy and the state and the country.
But what happens if companies start to do that?
Well, this is where workers' unions are so important.
Absolutely.
We have to fight against that because that is part of the benefit of being employed. And so it has to stay a benefit of being employed. We certainly can't ask somebody whose wage has increased to forsake other benefits of their work.
No, I think to summarize the concern, it's not that we would ask them voluntarily to do that. It's that companies would say, okay, well, you're making me pay more in wages, then I'm cutting benefits elsewhere. And the net effect for the worker might not be as good. So what you're saying is organize.
Yes.
Yeah, I'm saying organize.
I'm agreeing.
I agree.
Sorry, 100%.
And I think we need to absolutely organize, but also and push back.
Right.
I'd like to be able to understand why exactly it is that you feel the need to do that.
Right.
Show us the numbers. You know, when we talk about companies and what their annual statements look like in terms of profit, then you really start to question, well, how much is enough? Right. And when so as long as we are also taking care of the individuals who help us to get there, they're a critical portion of why you have the results that you have at that, you know, in your company. So to say that they will end up doing these things, it's very likely that some of them may consider that. And I absolutely agree. We need to organize. We need to push back. I want to know why you're doing that. Show us the numbers and how much is enough.
Okay.
And society pays huge costs
absolutely.
When people can't take care of themselves.
Right. It's in our insurance, the cost of insurance, mm-hmm. the cost of everything goes up. And I'm supporting unions 100%. I think they need to support the workers and in institutions or places where there aren't, they should be organizing. And I think that's the only way to fight back.
If we don't have worker organization, do you think, Julie, that we will see companies try to circumvent or at least kind of mitigate what they perceive to be the impact of a higher minimum wage? Do you expect that to happen?
I don't expect that to happen. I see a world where everyone is happy that we are finally treating people as they should be treated.
What is this world?
It's on the horizon, Evan. Okay. I think tomorrow morning.
I don't mean to be cynical, and I'm asking a good faith question. Yeah. I think just to say that if this happens, what happens? One of the main points.
I don't envision
okay.
that.
Okay. Right. Okay. So another listener is asking regarding 56 cents on the dollar, and again, he's talking about Hispanic women vis-a-vis what they make regarding white men in this country, 56 cents on the dollar. It says, can the data be broken out to show how much of that is due to different effects? How much is due to the differences in job choices? How much is due to gender discrimination? How much due to ethnicity? How much to other factors? Is it possible to get a sense for how much each of the factors influences what the gap is and what it would be without those factors? My concern is that we probably don't know the relative effect sizes, so we're not in a good position to propose effective policy solutions.
Yeah. So there are good studies out there, but thus far at this point, I don't know if people have broken it out as far as this particular listener is suggesting. And again, for us to be able to get to that level, I think that there are some intangibles, unfortunately, that are not going to be able to be had on there. But that doesn't take away from the fact that the gap is real. And it doesn't take away from the fact that when we are talking about pay equity gap, we're talking about the median income, men versus women in the same cohorts, same occupations. And so, again, to say how much of this is because of their job choice, how much of this job choice is irrelevant if we're talking about the same cohorts of individuals, men and women, within the same professions. Mm-hmm. So the both of them have chosen the same profession, and the gap exists within it. And so to want to break out all these things, I guess, but by the same token, I don't think that necessarily gets us any closer to what it is we need to achieve here.
But do you feel like we can make effective policy without more knowledge, more research?
I mean, we can always have more research to be able to fuel our policy decisions. But I think we have a wealth of information at this point. When you look at AAUW site, they cite many different resources. On payequitycoalition.com, there is a ton of information that links to other studies that have been completed. So there is a wealth of information out there now. Could we have more? Absolutely. But it should not stop us from being able to do what we know now are hindrances of why some of this is existing.
People just want justice and fairness. I don't think that's too hard. And I think that if we have a conscience when we're running a business, we need to be able to treat our workers fairly. People are working very hard. You've heard the conversation. Two or three jobs. People can't purchase. I mean, it's just a matter of the heart to me. You know, we hear the stories. You can talk about the data. But we also, as women, if we're running companies, we need to also make sure our workers are treated fairly so we can be examples for others of what we're doing.
We're in the midst of national conversations about different policies, obviously with the 2020 presidential election coming our way. But between the midterms now and the presidential elections, these big issues are on the national table. There's going to be a lot of differences of opinion on the Democratic side, much as like we saw with the Republican side in 2016, 2015, 2016. There are a wide range of candidates with different ideas. I want to ask our guests, no matter what side of the political aisle, though some might have suspicions, but I want to ask if you feel like you are seeing the kinds of voices, proposals, and candidates who are going to address this to make real change anytime soon. Gaynell?
Oh, God. I'm hopeful. I think I need to hear more from the candidates in terms of what the issues are around, not just, you know, just in terms of, I'm concerned about the poor, the people who are the working poor, the people who are struggling every day. What are we going to do to lift them up? And I think that's, to me, a concern in our community. And my concern also is those agencies and communities that are serving them, what are we going to do to ensure that they succeed? And we've not, I think we have more than enough money. Capitalism, we have it. It's just how do we want to distribute those funds to make sure people are successful. I do see people working two or three jobs. They're struggling. Most often they don't have time to money to buy lunch. I think those things are critical if we're going to move forward. And we want the commitment to our communities to be successful. If they don't have money, we're not going to support your businesses. That's just the bottom line. And I think that we forget that. We're asking people to support businesses, go purchase items. what are we going to do about it? You know what I'm, you know, I think we need to think about that. We've done well in terms of protesting some companies that don't treat their workers fair. I think we need to do that. We need to think about a different strategy as well as the strategies that these young ladies are proposing here today in terms of policy. No, it yeah. has to happen across the board. It cannot be just policies. The policies help. And I go back to the fact that in 1964, the Voting Rights Act was passed. Now we are suppressing the vote. We're telling people they can't vote. You need ID to vote. We're going to be dealing with the same issues around pay. And that's my challenge to all of us.
All right. Before I get back to your phone calls, Kai in Canandaigua, I'm coming there in a second. Jackie, do you see the kind of candidates and issues being raised on perhaps on a national level that at least make you optimistic that these issues are going to be addressed?
Yeah, I have definitely seen several candidates that have brought to the forefront issues that are very important to, you know, majority of Americans, if you will. And so, yes, I am very hopeful that individuals have the passion and the wherewithal to be able to push the policies that are necessary to uplift all of us here in this country. And so, you know, whether they're candidates or even more important, those who are sitting in elected office at this very moment, the proof is in the pudding, right? And so for those who are actually supporting the policies that are necessary to do some of these things, those are the individuals, again, no matter what party line, if you're doing those things to support our folks, then that's the most important thing. And I appreciate anyone who is doing that and continuing to push that with their colleagues.
That was an interesting way of mentioning zero names who are running for an office. Jackie's going, I'm practiced at this. Julie, are you satisfied with what you're seeing?
Well, I'm going to choose optimism when I'm thinking about politics. I'm not going to mention any candidates' names either. But I think a problem that will continue, it has to do with misogyny and in hiring and in pay and in working. But we have to keep struggling, and we will do that. And I think that there are candidates who are full of hope for us.
Okay. Back to your phone calls. In Canandaigua, this is Kai. Next, go ahead, Kai.
Well, I don't want to take the floor, so if you feel that I'm saying too much, just cut me out. But my impression is that the situation with wages and the way that women are being treated in the workforce is the reflection of the way that the society is treating women, or has been treating women. Think about it this way. When I was seeing my patient and I would ask a man what he did as a history, no matter what a man would do, he would answer the question with pride. Whether it was a first-class sailor or a coal miner or a physician. When I ask the same question of a woman, she would answer that question dismissively. Oh, I didn't do anything. Oh, I just went to secretary school. I didn't, professionally, no, I didn't do anything. I stayed home. I raised children. Okay, how many children did you raise? Five. Wow. Raising five children, in my book, it's more difficult than many jobs that men did during that same time when that woman was staying home raising kids. But the society is dismissing this. And now, think about it this way. Now, this is changing. The new generations of women are looking at themselves and the way they work and the value of their work differently than the older generations. That is true. But the younger generation of women is also talking to the older generation of women and is getting that sort of like dismissiveness of the importance of what they did or what they do. The simple example is that the Social Security is not counting towards women retirement when they go and raise our new generation, whether it's boys or girls. And mark my words, which is cynical to a good degree, there is a possibility that there is going to be a change in the law where the Social Security is going to be counted towards the retirement. But you know why? It's not because the way that we are looking at the women, in my humble opinion. It is because more men are staying home and taking care of the kids. What's the comment?
Kai, mm-hmm. Thank you for the phone call.
Yes, I agree 100%. I think, no, I do think for women, and I've had women who've come who said, you know, I have to start all over again and stay at home and take care of the kids. Now I'm not making what I should towards my retirement. But I think whoever stays home, there should be some remuneration for raising kids.
Okay,
I would absolutely agree. And actually, I think it's interesting how this particular speaker framed it up, that there could potentially be some changes, but the changes as a possible result of the fact that things are flipping, where more men are now starting to stay home. So therefore, the conversation is changing on how to be able to include that. So I think there's something to that. I don't have anything, obviously, to back that up. But I think it's definitely an interesting and very thought-provoking statement there, that perhaps the tides are turning, or the scales are flipping here because of the fact that more men are actually staying home now, raising children.
Okay, Julie?
I thought he sounded a little bit like a hero. That's all.
Maybe he should run for office.
Thank you, Kai. Let me get Jack in Greece on the phone next. Go ahead, Jack.
Oh, hi, Evan. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
Hey, Evan, I just wanted to comment on, and I'm not sure I caught the whole entire conversation, so I apologize if I'm repeating something that's already been asked. But my experience as a manager for many years and with a professional organization or a large local company, pay equity. Just go back to the conversation about pay equity for the same job. I had electrical engineering staff, and we had a structure in place where people were paid for their performance. Yes, there were differences in salaries, but nothing to do with gender. And I'm not sure how people could go about doing that. My other thought is, I think when we come back to legislation, we're going to come back to each company versus another company. They're going to set their policies based on, what they can afford to pay for a particular job. And quite honestly, in my opinion, it comes down to what people bring to the table in terms of qualifications. The other thought was, we seem to be mixing two things into the conversation. They're both good topics, but the topic of pay equity across jobs and gender and race. But the other has to do with what's a fair wage to pay people. Quite honestly, when it comes down to it, based on our experience, our education, it demands a certain salary, whether you're a doctor, a lawyer, an engineer, or a plumber. It comes down to the skill set that you bring. And I'm not sure how you look those and versus if someone's taking care of folks, like I said, in the healthcare situation, what's a fair wage? That's, in my opinion, that's a different discussion that needs to take place.
Sure. And Jack, can I just ask you a quick question?
Sure.
Because you were a manager, as you mentioned, so did you ever make a hiring decision based on gender?
You know, that was the interesting thing. We had so much trouble trying to recruit engineers to Rochester. And we had our HR policies were pretty strong, where we actually, we were trying to hire. We couldn't meet our gap.
Sure,
we
sure.
couldn't meet our targets for women or minorities because there weren't enough candidates. And I asked the question of the HR managers, look, you want me to meet these targets, give me candidates that meet the criteria. Oh, we can't do that because that would be discrimination. Well, it's like, I tried to hire based on gender. I actually tried to look for women engineers, and it was very, very difficult.
Well, Jack, just because we're down to our last couple minutes, I got to let you go, but I'm glad you called. Thank you for doing that. And I want to turn it over to our guests just for some response to what they heard there.
Recruitment is critical, but we tend to go to the same places for recruitment mm-hmm. instead of looking at a broader base of recruitment. I'm not originally from Rochester, recruited from some New Orleans, Louisiana. You have to, if you're looking for these engineers, certainly I think of the student, my daughter's an engineer, RIT. You have to look in those places where you're looking for those pools of candidates from, maybe down south, those colleges and universities. We tend to be very local in our thought while I sit this out here. Instead of looking at those relationships that might generate that kind of candidate that we're looking for, we have a lot of women engineers. We have all the, we look at historically black colleges. I think those places that I don't think some of the HR people ordinarily think about, and I think those connections are critical when we're looking at hiring practices.
Okay, Jackie.
So I think I want to just take one of the other pieces of what that particular speaker just mentioned.
Sure, we're down to about 1 minute. Go ahead.
Yeah, and that was the information in terms of, I don't know how people do that per se in terms of the pay gap based on gender. And here part of this is that we don't know what we don't know right. for some of this information. And part of the change is this is being able to collect the data by gender, by race, by profession, and making that something that's publishable for everyone to be able to see. So again, that's really critical in being able to kind of take the blanket off of this entire thing and really provide some transparency so that you can actually see even more so and get to some of the things that people have been alluding to in terms of what are some of the other factors and what does this whole thing look like. And one other thing really quick that I want to say, this does not mean that people's pay is going up tomorrow, right? So I think people need to also stop, you know, putting the fear out there that all of a sudden, you know, right. companies are going to be this huge wads of cash that they're going to have to outlay for you know, closing the pay gap. And that's just not true. This is being able to provide some protections and that information so that at the end of the day, if it's discovered, there are some remedies and some protections from people to be able to go after and then be able to have that equity.
You can learn more if you want to participate on Tuesday, April 2nd. Jackie Ortiz, one more time. Where is that? When and where? Tuesday, April 2nd.
So April 2nd, Women's Equal Pay Day. It is 11:45, Workers United, 750 East Avenue. If you forget that, PayEquityCoalition.com.
PayEquityCoalition.com if you want to hear more about what our guests have said. Jackie Ortiz, a member of Rochester City Council in La Cumbre. Thank you, Jackie.
Thank you, Evan.
Our thanks to Julie Damrell, Associate Professor Emeritus at MCC. Thank you for being here.
Thank you.
And our thanks to Gaynell Weathers, President of AAUW. That's the American Association of University Women. Thank you.
Thank you.
Short break, more connections coming up.